I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. U.S. President Joe Biden has authorized Ukraine to use U.S.-supplied long-range missiles to strike deeper inside Russia. The move eases limitations on the weapons as Russia deploys thousands of North Korean troops to reinforce its war. Word of the decision comes from a U.S. official and three other people familiar with the matter. Thousands of North Korean troops have been sent to Ukraine's northern border to help Russia reclaim hundreds of kilometers of territory seized by Ukrainian forces. Russia launched a massive airstrike campaign against neighboring Ukraine on Sunday. Local officials say several people died and the power system suffered, quote-unquote, severe damage. VOA's Arash Arvasani has more.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia launched 120 missiles and 90 drones, including Iranian-made Shaheds. Kyiv's Air Force says the military destroyed 104 missiles and 42 of the drones. Russia says it was targeting energy facilities that power Ukraine's military-industrial complex. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to bring a speedy end to the conflict between the two nations. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz recently spoke with Russian President Vladimir Putin and reiterated Europe's support for Ukraine no matter what happens in Washington. But for now, Ukrainian first responders have their hands full removing missile debris from blown-out buildings. Ukrainian officials say at least seven people died in the attacks, which they say caused severe damage to the power system. The strikes prompted emergency power cuts through several regions. Russia's war on Ukraine will reach the 1,000-day mark this week. Arash Arvasani, VOA News.
This is VOA News. President Biden has made a historic visit to the Amazon rainforest. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
President Biden saw the devastation of drought firsthand as the first American president to set foot in the Amazon rainforest, touring the area Sunday and pledging that nobody can reverse what he says is the clean energy revolution underway in America, even as the incoming Trump administration is poised to scale back the U.S. commitment to combating climate change.
We don't have to choose between the environment and the economy. We can do both. We've proven it back home. It's no secret that I'm leaving office in January. I will leave my successor and my country a strong foundation to build on if they choose to do so.
Biden announcing new efforts to help the Amazon rainforest, including financing reforestation and land protection. I'm Julie Walker.
Pope Francis has called for an investigation to determine if Israel's attacks in Gaza constitute genocide, according to excerpts released from an upcoming new book ahead of the pontiff's Jubilee year. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The book, Hope Never Disappoints, Pilgrims Towards a Better World, is based on interviews with the pontiff. In it, he says, according to some experts, what is happening in Gaza has the characteristics of a genocide. One of those experts, UN Special Rapporteur of Occupied Palestinian Territory, Francesca Albanese, said on March of this year, she had reported to the UN General Council,
where I concluded that based on my findings over 5 months of investigation, there were reasonable grounds to believe that Israel had committed acts of genocide in Gaza.
Albanese's report comes after South Africa brought a case to the UN's top court in December 2023, in which it claimed Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. Spain, Chile, and 8 other countries have petitioned the court to join the case. I'm Karen Chamas.
Authorities in Gabon said on Sunday voters have overwhelmingly approved a new constitution more than a year after mutinous soldiers overthrew the country's longtime president and seized power in the oil-rich Central African nation. Gabon's interior minister said in a statement read on state television that over 91% of voters approved the new constitution in a referendum held on Saturday. The draft constitution, which proposes sweeping changes that could prevent dynastic rule and transfer of power, needed more than 50% of the votes cast to be adopted. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Senegalese await results from Sunday's parliamentary election.
I think the Pastef itself expected the results to be in its favor, and also there many people within Pastef thought that they will get more than 60%. Some people were even talking about 80%.
A Gabonese activist will explain why he voted no in the weekend constitutional referendum. The world marks Cervical Cancer Action Day with the disease threatening vulnerable groups. The two sides in Liberia's divided parliament debate the outcome of an ECOWAS mediation delegation visit. South African police set up a task force to rescue trapped illegal miners.
What my task force is the life of the people that are there underground, because we also want to demystify this narrative that has been spread all over that we are not a caring government and we don't care for people's lives.
And U.S. House Speaker said Trump's cabinet picks will shake up the status quo. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's force are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senegalese are awaiting results from Sunday's parliamentary election. President Bassirou Diomaye Faye's Pastef party is hoping to secure most of the 165-member National Assembly. The Senegalese political analyst Ibrahima Khan tells me that voting went well without any incident and that the trend is pointing to Pastef winning a majority.
Everything went well. There was no big problem, you know, no violence. People went to vote and went back home and after came back to the polling station to get the results. Everything went smoothly. I didn't hear from any violence or problem during the whole day.
Coming into the election, there were some reports of campaign violence, and you are saying you did not hear of any violence on Sunday.
Yes, because I think that's a kind of tradition in Senegal. You know, the campaign is always agitated, but the day of the election, everything goes calm. And then after, when people get the results, everybody goes home and that's the end. If some people think that the result is not what they wanted, they go to court. Already one political party said probably that they have some problem with the way some decisions have been taken. They want to go to court. But apart from that, there is nothing serious to mention.
Of course, there's a lot at stake for the ruling Pastef. So who do you think might come on top?
Well, I think the Pastef itself expected the result to be in its favor. And also, there are many people within Pastef thought that they will get more than 60%. Some people were even talking about 80%. But I think the opposition parties resisted because even in some of the districts, apparently they've won at least in 3 or 4 districts, meaning that, you know, there was not a kind of razzia of Pastef in this election. And I think that is useful for the Senegalese democracy because that will be reflected at the parliament with, you know, a big part of the parliament composed of Pastef militant, but also opposition well represented at the parliament. And I hope it will be a useful, a strong opposition that can at least participate fully in the coming debate at the parliament.
And that would include the former president?
Yes, that would include the former president. His party got some voices, particularly in the northern part of the country, but also the former prime minister, Amadou Ba, who had his own coalition, and the mayor of Dakar, who lost the vote in Dakar, unfortunately for him, but I think gains support in other places.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. Gabonese are awaiting results from Saturday's constitutional referendum. If the new constitution is approved, it will usher in a limit of 2 terms of 7 years each on the presidency, remove the position of prime minister, and recognize French as Gabon's official language. Gabonese rights and democracy activist Frank Jock Ting explains to me why he voted no for the new constitution.
The reason why I voted no, it's very simple. It's because I believe that this constitution is not right for us. as a people. I believe that it's not promoting democracy. I believe that it's not the rule of the military to design or craft a constitution. I believe that Oligui Nguema promised to the Gabonese people that he will end the government back to civilian. And that's what I'm expecting, and that's what I would like to see. I'm not seeing it yet, so that's why I'm voting no. And there's some specific things in the Constitution that I have trouble with. First is that he wants the mandate to be 7 years. I think that 7 years is too long, because in the U.S., for example, it's for every 4 years. The American people have the right to choose the person that will lead them. And I think that Gabon need to do something similar. In France, for example, it's 5 years. 7 years is too long.
At least there will be a limit. After a 2 to 7 year term, the assumption is that the person in power cannot run again, as opposed to the previous one, which was a 5 year term, but renewable without limit.
Yes, I think when you look at it, that seems to be, at the first glance, it appears to be democratic. But I still believe that 14 years, for example, if he's being reelected, is too much. Even 7 years for one term, for me, is too much. I believe that absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the longer a man is in power, he believes that he becomes the power. And, you know, power is addictive. And I think the longer you get in power, the more you get accustomed to it and the more you want to use it for your own benefit instead of the benefit of your people.
When do you expect the results will be known or announced?
That's a very good question. I'm not able to tell you because I don't even think that the Gabonese people or the Gabonese government right now know exactly when they will be releasing the result, because everything will need to be concentrated, I believe, to the Minister of Interior, and it's from there that they are going to give us the tendency if it is the yes or the no that did win. So to answer your question directly, I do not know.
Frank Jongting is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Monday, November 18. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. It appears the Economic Community of West African States Parliamentary Delegation to resolve the impasse in the Liberian House of Representatives was unsuccessful. The delegation said over the weekend that the parties were not able to arrive at a favorable conclusion. A group of lawmakers claiming to be the majority in the House have accused Speaker Jefonati Kofa of conflict of interest and want him removed. The Speaker has refused to step down. Representative Fode Edward Fambule is the chair of the Good Governance and Reform Committee and a member of the majority. He tells me that the ECOWAS delegation understood the majority's position.
I think it is based on how they saw their objective of coming to Liberia to be. If they were coming on the basis of what the legislative topic is and the positions of the majority, I think in the context of that, they were able to achieve a lot. The positions of the majority has always been to ensure that they can uphold the speaker and due process that will be in line with what the Liberian law provides. In the face of that, there's nothing new that they were trying to recommend. I think all of the recommendations are in keeping with the due process, and it is that due process, as you can see in their communique, that they made mention of. So the Liberian legislature, in the context of the majority sitting in session, to afford the speaker the opportunity to be heard.
What's wrong with you resuming your sitting in the main chamber?
So the speaker initially filed a request before the highest court of the Republic of Liberia, that is the Supreme Court. And some of the requests was that where we are currently sitting, the court should be able to sit as to whether that place is legal or not. The legitimacy of our sitting in the joint chamber was then questioned. Our action in terms of the speaker request that the majority sitting in session should return under his gavel So they drafted into listening to all of the complaints, read the laws, and said no to the speaker in terms of his pleading because he filed for a stay order to be placed on the activities of primary injunction, and that action the Supreme Court said no. So in the face of that meeting, the justice in Chima had settled the issue of law that has to do with the legitimacy of sitting in the John Chima. So they have done a formal resolution that will use the John Chima for plenary sitting that is in keeping with our law and practice. When ECOWAS came, we only gave reference to the ruling of the court and where we are sitting is legitimate. It is incumbent on the negotiator to talk to the speaker and tell him the law provides that these guys can sit in the capital building, in the joint chamber, and conduct session. It is upon you with the minority, no matter what, and say to them, you cannot insist that you should, they should sit on a gavel in where you prescribe to be the most legitimate spot. No, there's no law supporting that.
Representative for the Fumbler is the chair of the Good Governance and Reform Committee in the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A member of the minority bloc in Liberia's parliamentary impasse says he thinks the majority has shown disrespect to the Economic Community of West Africa since ECOWAS parliamentary mediation delegation. Eugene G.M. Colley is a member of the minority bloc, which supports Speaker Jefonati Kofa. He tells me that the removing the speaker must follow the constitution and the rules of the House of Representatives.
Again, we appreciate the efforts of the ECOWAS delegation. I'm one person who stands by the law. ECOWAS came, we had a meeting with them, and I think for our end, there was nothing much difficult because only the fact that we are standing by the law, we saw it couldn't that, of course, they can reach out to the secretary majority bloc. And after that, we got to realize that they are putting up so many hostility and they don't want to listen to ECOWAS, that which we see as disrespect to Africa. Well, again, as it is, we still stand by the law.
Can you specify exactly which law do you stand by?
Article 49 of the Liberia Constitution talks about removal of a speaker. That's the case, but it should be by two-third majority. And we know that currently our opposing forces have not high the number, but they thought to leave from the usual chambers that we had our session to go to the joint chamber, which we see as being wrong. Article 33 of the Constitution also gives the right to the minority to have session day to day, and if there's no quorum, call the individual lawmaker to come to session. We have done that. We have number, but then they are not listening to that. So I think that I've breached to the Constitution. So if I say to you that I stand by the law, I am focusing on the law, and not just the Constitution as well, but our rule, the rule that governs us in the House of Parliament.
One of the arguments I've heard is that the so-called majority bloc did not afford Speaker Kofa due process. Now, I am hearing from the so-called majority bloc that they have given the speaker a chance to come and defend himself. Will the speaker appear?
So, Mr. Budgie, if they have given the speaker due process, I'm not sure ECOWAS will have a problem with them. Because of the refusal to give the speaker due process, that's the reason why ECOWAS has stated that the mediation did not end well. It ended in deadlock because after ECOWAS spoke to them, that they, the Supreme Majority Bloc, should come in session and put forth their activities or whatever, their claims, their counterclaims. Then, of course, the speaker will recuse himself. And at that point, two things will be on the agenda. That has to do with the speaker's recusal and that of the presentation of the budget. And given the fact that there will be a stipulation signed by both parties so that we all can see that as a means to move this country forward. So I can squarely tell you that they have not had any mindset to give the speaker due process.
Representative Eugene J.M. Colley is a member of the minority bloc in the Liberian House of Representatives who support Speaker Jefonati Kofa. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. There is now light at the end of the tunnel for an estimated 4,000 illegal miners who have refused to resurface from an abandoned gold mine in Stiftung, northwest province of South Africa. The Minister of Police has set up a task force that includes mine rescue experts to start getting the miners out. Tuso Kumalo reports. from Johannesburg.
Addressing the media following a meeting with mine rescue experts, community leaders, government officials, police and army representatives, Police Minister Senzo Mchunu said he expects the rescue operation to start within 7 days.
We've got to mind and focus with undivided attention on how many people are we able to take out per day. That is what is critical. Then we'll look at the, we will then start counting how many people were there after we've rescued all of them.
The Northwest Province member of the Executive Council, Wessels Moreng, has been tasked to lead the rescue team. He says rescue experts are expected to urgently visit the mine to rescue the illegal miners.
We don't even have a second to waste. What is important is for us to restore the people's life. What matters to us is the life of the people that are there underground, because we also want to demystify this narrative that has been spread all over that we are not a caring government and we don't care for people's lives.
The thought of having their relatives brought on the surface has excited relatives. Lina Minazea, a Zimbabwean national, has two of her sons underground.
I want to hear just like, he's there or he's gone. Because now everyone, they said, no people inside. Yeah, he's died. I don't know, he's dead or he's there, I don't know. I want to see.
Johannes Gangase, a community leader who led the call to rescue the miners, has welcomed the government's latest move.
Ours is very simple. Let's save those lives, let's remove those cops, let the families bury their own people, police arrest those who you see as criminals.
Police spokesperson Atlenda Mate told VOA that the illegal miners were not prevented from resurfacing. She said police stopped food and water from reaching the miners as a way of encouraging them to resurface.
We are standing static at all these entry and exit points. There is no blockages at all. We are standing static to prevent these illegal miners from going down there to continue with their illegal mining operations. But we are also standing there to prevent food and water from going down there, as well as the necessary necessities, as a way of forcing them to resurface.
The government claims illegal mining is very rampant in 7 provinces of South Africa, costing the country millions of dollars. So far, over 1,000 illegal miners have been arrested from surrounding mines in the northwest, most of them nationals of neighboring countries. Tuso Kumalo, VOA News, Johannesburg.
More than 85% of cervical cancer cases and deaths occur in low- and middle-income countries, and the World Health Organization says the disease burdens the most vulnerable groups. As the world marked the 4th anniversary of the launch of the global strategy to eliminate cervical cancer as a public health problem on Sunday, the WHO says the disease is still the 4th most common cancer in women globally. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The WHO reports that the highest rates of cervical cancer incidence and mortality are in sub-Saharan Africa, Central America, and Southeast Asia. November 17th is observed as the Cervical Cancer Elimination Day of Action. This year's theme is Elevating Frontline Health Workers, Transforming Global Commitments into Life-Saving Actions. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says frontline health workers play a vital role in shaping the delivery of effective interventions for cervical cancer prevention, treatment, palliative care, and survivorship care.
Years ago today, WHO and communities around the world made a historic commitment to eliminate cervical cancer, one of the few cancers that can be prevented and cured if detected early. The support of advocates, partners, and communities are driving progress towards our shared 90-70-90 targets of vaccination, screening, and treatment. To date, 144 countries have introduced the HPV vaccine into national immunization programs, and many are also rolling out next-generation diagnostics.
He was speaking in a video comment the WHO released. Even though cervical cancer is highly detectable and curable, the disease is still one of the most common cancers worldwide. WHO member states are tasked with ensuring 90% of girls are vaccinated with the HPV vaccine by the age of 15. 70% of women are screened using high-performance tests by the age of 35, and treating 90% of women with precancer and those with invasive cancer by 2030. Most cases are caused by human papilloma virus, which the HPV vaccine prevents. According to the WHO, regional differences in the cervical cancer burden are related to inequalities in access to vaccination, screening, and treatment services. Women living with HIV are 6 times more likely to develop cervical cancer compared to the general population.
While we are making progress, we still face huge inequities, with women in low-income countries bearing most of the burden. Only with strong leadership and sustained investment can we achieve our shared goal of equitable access for communities most in need. Together, let's make cervical cancer history.
The WHO calls for support from around the world to recognize and lift up the contributions of frontline health workers providing life-saving services to eliminate cervical cancer. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. The final round of Group E matches in the CAF Africa Cup of Nations AFCON 2025 qualifiers brought contrasting fortunes as Algeria dismantled Liberia 5-1 to end their campaign unbeaten, while Togo claimed a morale-boosting 3-0 win over Equatorial Guinea in Lome on Sunday. Algeria battled back from an early goal down to trounce Liberia 5-1 in their final 2025 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier. The Lone Stars took a surprise lead through Samson Dwere after just 6 minutes, but goals from Aissa Mandi, Riyad Mahrez, Bagad Bojena, Amine Gouri, and Mohamed Almora maintained the Phoenix Foxes' unbeaten record in Group E. In women's football, the Confederation of African Football has confirmed that the official draw of the CAF Women's Africa Cup of Nations WAFCON Morocco 2024 will be conducted on Friday the 22nd of November at the Mohammed VI Technical Center in Saleh, Morocco. The draw will determine the fate of the 12th Africa's top women's national team. The 13th edition of the CAF Women's Africa Cup of Nations will take place from the 5th to the 26th of July 2025 in Morocco. In the CAF Women's Champions League, Nigeria champions Edo Queens secured a dramatic semi-final spot of the CAF Women's Champions League after coming from behind to defeat defending champions Mamelodi Sundowns 2-1 in a thrilling encounter at the Labi Zaouli Stadium, Casablanca on Saturday. Egypt's Masar also advanced to the semi-finals after defeating the Central Bank of Ethiopia Ladies 2-1 in the group's second match played simultaneously at the Ben Amha Ahmed El Abdi Stadium. Edo Queens will now look to become the first Nigerian side to reach the final of the continental competition as they face TP Mazembe in the semi-final, before a North African battle between host ES Far and FC Masar concludes the semi-finals to decide the last two standing teams of the competition. And now to athletics, where two-time world cross-country champion Jacob Kiplimo took 23 seconds off his own course record to win the 15-kilometer race in Netherlands on Sunday in a time of 14 minutes 42 seconds, a world best time. His winning time is the fastest time ever recorded in the standalone 15-kilometer race. And finally, in cricket news, Nigeria will host 5 other African countries in the sub-regional African qualifier C in Abuja in the T20 2026 World Cup qualifier. Nigeria will be joined by Botswana, Ivory Coast, Eswatini, St. Helena and Sierra Leone for a week-long cricket action that will produce two finalists for the next stage of the World Cup qualifier. And that's it for these Monday's editions of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week. Thank you.